Welcome to the Otherworlds GG Community Cast. This is episode number 27. I am Table for Two, also known as Hunter, and I am joined today by Mellified and Alien Pickle. How are you guys doing today?
I am doing very well.
I'm all right.
Doing great. Doing great. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, how excited are you?
I'm at about an 8, you know. I mean,
yeah, it's not bad. I think 8's a good place to be.
My rooster apparently is very excited. He's outside crowing. I apologize in advance if we get serenaded.
I was going to take that in a different direction, but anyway. All right. So, we've talked about at length on a few different things at times. We've gushed over, you know, Microsoft here, certainly. We love what they're doing with Game Pass. We think it's an excellent thing. And we've talked about in our last show, when we were talking about some of the news, that the news from Sony seems to be lackluster at best in a lot of ways. And it's really quite a shame. And the thought process has come to mind, and I've seen arguments online about this before, debates or conversations about, you know, are console exclusives good for gamers? And I certainly used to think so, and I certainly do think so in a lot of ways, because, you know, when there's competition in the market, I think everybody benefits, really. And sometimes you can also... Go ahead.
I just hate to see them lock a good game on a bad console.
And there's, sometimes that's a thing too. And the nature of that being like, you know, you can even get competition within, you know, an ecosystem too, right? I mean, PC is a classic example. You have so many launchers, so many storefronts. There's definitely competition around for where you can get things, where you can buy things. You know, PC gamers, I think, have a lot of advantages because they get a lot of choice. They get a lot of options. They can really kind of pick and choose and curate their experience a lot easier than console players, but that doesn't necessarily make them better. It's just another place to play your games. And as much as we've gushed over Microsoft, I think there is something of a bit of a concern there as well, right? Like, at what point does Microsoft become so saturated in the market that it's just so everywhere that the competition is strangled out? You know, I made a prediction in the last show, and I still believe it, is that there's a chance that in the future here, the PlayStation brand itself will become the next Sega. You know, Sega's still around. Sega still does stuff with its software and its IPs and stuff like that, but they're no longer a hardware manufacturer. They no longer deal in the hardware market. And, you know, with Sony investing time into porting games to the PC, with Sony investing time into that kind of stuff, it's a wonder that they're doing well, you know, given that the PlayStation 5 is out. And the PlayStation 5, like, I want to preface this, is not a bad console, right? The new Ratchet & Clank is making waves. A lot of people are loving it. I would love to play it, although I don't have a PlayStation 5 because I can't afford one or find one. But I also can't find an Xbox Series X either. So I'm still stuck on my Xbox One X, and I'm still thankful for that. I'm still stuck on my PC, but I kind of want to have this conversation, though. At what point do we really, you know, Xbox is doing good, but at what point do we start getting concerned with Xbox? You know, it's like Nintendo. Nintendo is still holding on for whatever it's worth, but their console exclusives are what keep them around, because you can't get their stuff anywhere else. I guess one could argue you could emulate it on the PC, but that's not a sustainable solution for anybody. And on top of that, legally speaking, you're supposed to own the games anyway before you emulate them. So, yeah, I wanted to get y'all's take on some of the stuff. I see Mellified's got his microphone muted. I don't know if it's because his rooster's crowing or what, but...
rooster's going ape.
But I definitely wanted to get y'all's take on some of this stuff. So what do you guys think about some of these things?
Well, I feel like Nintendo, you only get one of each type of game from them each generation. Like, hey, we're making this Zelda game, and then we're going to ship a new Switch, so we're going to put a new Zelda game on the new Switch. But you don't get another one until we ship another piece of hardware. All right, so it's like, do you want to play this generation's Mario? You have to buy this generation's console.
And that hasn't always been the case with them, but it certainly seems so over the years, right? Because, you know, we had two Zelda games on the original Nintendo. We had one on the Super Nintendo. We had two on the N64. We had at least two or three on the GameCube, because we also got Twilight Princess on the GameCube while they also simultaneously released it on the Wii. Then we also got, what was it? Was that all? We got the HD remasters of things, but on the Wii, was Twilight Princess all we got on the Wii, and then Skyward Sword came out on the Wii U? Is that how that worked? I'm confused.
I can't remember anymore.
No, I think Skyward Sword also came out on the Wii, and then on the Wii U they released Breath of the Wild when they also released it on the Switch. So they've done some cross-generational things, but obviously they want you to get the new hardware for the new game because it's going to look better and play better and do better on the new system. So Breath of the Wild was making waves, but they've talked about at length about the fact that they're making this sequel to Breath of the Wild, but yet it's still apparently coming, but we've seen nothing other than some trailers here and there, some, you know, a little bit of gameplay. But the point you're making, though, and the point that I agree with, is that they're not exactly a one trick pony, but God, they're very close to it. And that's what sells their stuff mostly, you know. And they're also more geared toward younger generations, so they're definitely more family friendly for sure. But how sustainable is that in the long term?
Well, I think where to begin. Nintendo talked about with the Wii was their blue ocean strategy, which is a business term that talks about don't be in close to shore where all your competitors are fighting over you know, fish or whatever. Go out to the blue ocean and do your own thing, and then you'll have all the fish you could ever want, right? So there's no, that was the intent with the Wii motion controls, was to do something completely different than nobody else was doing. And it also was driven by the fact that Nintendo lost the previous generation with the GameCube, right? They got their lunch eaten. And the reason that they wanted to do something different was they didn't want to be stuck competing on hardware specs. And if you look at the Wii, the Wii U, the Switch, they have definitely not been competing on hardware specs, right?
Well, that's the problem, because if the only thing you have that is a quality game is things specifically developed for your platform, then you have to get developers who wish to be locked into your platform with their title rather than have, you know, like cross-platform distribution, right?
Well, and what's interesting is what's happened with the Switch, right? Where, yes, we're getting these good first-party and sort of second-party releases, those developers, like you say, who are kind of willing to be locked in. But we're also getting, hey, here's my back catalog of PC games that are 10 years old. I'm going to port them to the Switch and dump them on the eShop and hope for the best.
Yeah.
Which has taught Nintendo that they should do that with their own freaking catalog.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to get with, because Jedi Outcast, I can get Jedi Outcast and get Jedi Academy on the Switch, but it's just like, whoa, what? But yeah, at the same time, what Jim was just about to say was, you know, they're not doing that with their own stuff, or at least a huge swath of their own stuff. But yeah, continue, Jim. Sorry.
That's basically it, right? Like, if I want to play Call of Duty, right, I'll use that example, because I remember the Call of Duty game that came out on the Nintendo DS, and it had absolutely nothing to do with the Call of Duty games that were on everything else, right? Because they just like took that name, stuck it on a game, and it's just some other game, right? But I guess it's like for the kids that want to play Call of Duty, but they have a DS. So here, play this like knockoff weird thing. You know, it's like, here's cell phone. Well, I can't say cell phone version because the cell phone version is kind of competitive with the real version now.
Yeah. Scary. These days. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, that's how it was. Right. So then you had like the Wii era is where it was, you know, like there are actually some games on the GameCube that were ports from the PS2 or whatever, you know, they were made not ported to, but simultaneous cross-platform releases. And the GameCube version is the superior version. Like if you look at those side by side, and I'll use Spy Hunter as my go-to, the GameCube version is better than the Xbox, better than the PS2 for whatever reason, right? Just looks better. But then they broke it because when you go to the Wii was a whole bunch of shovelware, casual stuff that wouldn't work on any other platform because the motion control stuff, you know, pretty much locked it in. It's almost like Nintendo came out with the only VR platform, right? You know, they were the Oculus of the time, except it was motion controls instead. But if you wanted to play anything, it had to be specifically designed for their console, their controllers, their whatever. So then you didn't get a lot of cross-platform things. But the things that you did were just bad because of the hardware limitation, right? But the things that it did that it was things that were experiences that were designed specifically for that platform were pretty good. Well, now we're in this Switch era where it's a little bit too anemic to really run modern stuff at all. Like we saw like the failure with like, hey, let's put Doom on there. Yeah, it runs like 10 frames a second, but man, I got Doom on my whatever. You know, it's not good. It's if you want to play the quality experience, you know, it was like get.
I feel like they've learned nothing from like putting StarCraft on the inside. Like,
ooh, yeah, that's a hot take, isn't it?
But I'm digging a little too hard on that.
No, I didn't even realize that they did something that was that just god awful cratering dumb. So yeah.
Or
like Red Alert, they could.
Right.
What did they put Red Alert on? That was the Xbox or something, right? It was like, ooh.
Well, they put Command and Conquer 3 on the Xbox 360.
Yeah,
I believe.
Yeah.
But anyway, the thing though, I think that we're really trying to get at though here is there's this weird market shift towards live services of games. The hot big developers and what they're making and people want to talk about next gen graphics and all this and that. And while graphics are important, cause you know, without them, you know, if you had nothing, then you couldn't play anything. But I think the quality of the graphics can really be, you could have a beautiful looking game, but it's just a big stinking pile of crap. You know, it's a polished, lovely, stinking pile of crap, but it's still a big stinking pile of crap.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the whole online thing. That's another thing. Like Nintendo, have you ever onlined?
It's the ridiculous friend code. Yeah.
Well, there's that whole ecosystem of games that are online games, right? And if you look at phones, okay, because the Switch kind of has one foot in the phone form factor and use case, and then another foot in the home console space, but neither one very well. And then they don't want to play the phone game because, you know, you don't want Android trash all over your platform, right? That's fine. But you do, though,
because you have to use the phone to use any kind of voice chat with their stuff.
Yeah.
Which is it's goofy.
Hey, so Microsoft is bringing all the Android ecosystems native into Windows 10. My Xbox runs Windows 10. Can I run Android games on my Xbox?
Microsoft? I don't think they've talked about that yet. But you know
it
what?
It won't happen.
Well, the way they're doing it, the way
for that, and it was called the Ouya.
Well, hold on a second. No. See, the problem with this is, though, is they've talked about how it's through the Amazon thing. So it's the Amazon version of Android apps, right? So you're not going to be getting everything that's like in the Google Play Store, for example, unfortunately. Although they also haven't really got into the whole sideloading thing, but I think from an official standpoint, they're using the Amazon ecosystem for the Android apps. Now, having said that, though, I would not be surprised if at some point that gets integrated with the Xbox. And I say that because of this. You mentioned the Call of Duty mobile phone competitiveness. There's a whole economy now for that. So BlueStacks is an Android emulator. But you want to know who else made an Android emulator? Tencent. And Tencent's Android emulator is gaining popularity. And people are using it for their Call of Duty tournament and, you know, playing and whatnot. I've been seeing stuff online about it. I would not be surprised if, for some reason, Microsoft got in on that bandwagon to let people install mobile versions of some of these games and you can play them on your Xbox. Or maybe even Game Pass partners with some of this stuff and you can play mobile versions of stuff through Game Pass. Honestly, yeah. It would not surprise me if Microsoft made some kind of deal for that with their gaming environment. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Yeah, and as somebody who bought a gamepad for my Android tablet so that I could play some games on it while I was on vacation, and then I find out when you go to the Google Play Store, there's no way to know if a game has gamepad support or not from in the store. And also, there's a lot of games you would think that has to have gamepad support and doesn't. So that's weird. But if we're going to the PC ecosystem, I don't know with Amazon, because they have like such a huge install base of Fire Sticks. And then you can use a Fire Stick as an Android game thing on your piece, on your TV, right? So do they do a good job of making it so that, you know, cause like if I go on my Nvidia Shield TV, then I can pull up a list of games that I can install, but it only shows me gamepad enabled games, right? So their store knows, it just doesn't tell me. So I wish there was a way that I could filter for like, hey, I want controller experience things because I'm playing this on my TV or my tablet with my gamepad, right?
Right.
Yeah. And I wonder, does Amazon's ecosystem actually indicate that better? Should I just put the Android or the Amazon app store on my tablet or what? Can I even do that? I know you can sideload Google.
No, you can.
Yeah, okay.
No. So like on my phone, I actually have like the Amazon app store on my phone. Right. You know, so like I could do that. And the reason why I do was years ago, or several years back at least it was, there was a deal going on with Amazon's app store where they were actually giving away KOTOR, the Android version of KOTOR through their store for free. So if I wanted to install it on my phone, I had to put the Amazon app store on my phone to be able to download and install it.
A little bit of that Tim Sweeney action there. They got you.
They did. And you know what? Honestly, as shocking as it is, KOTOR on the phone is actually a great experience. Not going to lie. It works really well. You could
probably run it on a Switch too. Why is KOTOR on the Switch?
I was going to break in. It's probably coming. I think they didn't because there's a rumored remaster of KOTOR coming. I was going to point out that at least on the website, you do have a game controller filter for the Amazon App Store. I've certainly used it on the Kindle Fire, but I didn't look for that feature specifically. But that would be nice. I agree that having that clearly stated and a way to filter it would make a lot of sense.
Yes.
Yeah. So especially with PC coming to the party.
Yeah.
I wonder. Yeah. Yeah. Cause they're going to use the Amazon system, but what is it? What's the deal with Amazon store versus the Play Store? Like, why would I have my game on Google's Play Store, but not on the Amazon store?
Amazon uses a slightly different version of Android, right? It's a fork. So there's possibly something there that would be different, but a lot of it's probably just business terms.
Yeah, and probably also if you're using Google's whatever their Play app thing is for their, you know, the gaming Android gaming center or whatever the hell it's called, but that's not on the Fire, right?
Correct.
So if you're using that for your multiplayer matchmaking stuff, you know, it's like, well, I use Steam for my matchmaking and I'm on PC, but you can't take that to the Xbox and use it.
Right.
So you have to, yeah, I guess that makes it more for single player things, not important. But if you're going to like have any kind of cloud save or any of that, then yeah, you're going to have to code for multiple APIs or something. Anyway, the nightmare is coming. It's coming.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess for me, circling back a little bit, I'm trying to think, like, the PS3 was not a huge success for Sony. The 360, especially in the US, dominated, and that was a big blow to Sony. What they took away from that was that they needed to integrate more online features because that was the big selling point that the 360 had.
Well, they should also made the console not a complete bitch to program for, because that was the problem, right? It was like, you were at the end of the ecosystem cycle for the PS3 before people figured out how to make games for it, right?
Well, and they had a very rigid memory model where half the memory was locked to the system and half was for the GPU, but it was very expensive to move data between those two, where the 360 had a unified memory model, so all of the memory was accessible and you could kind of decide what you wanted to do, which is why open world games like Skyrim had such a hard time on the PS3 because they were very, very constrained on memory.
I did think,
even
though
both systems had the same amount of memory overall,
I think something that Sony did interesting, because they did try to innovate with the PS3, which was their home thing, where it was like you had your little avatar in a digital world.
Yep.
I did think that was cool, and I wish that they had not given up on that despite their failings with the rest of the console, because I feel like that could have really taken them somewhere, because the Wii had that, right? You had your little Mii, you know, and they even have carried that through to like the Wii U, and I don't know what the Switch does, but you know, your online avatar, because there was a period of time where you had online avatars, and Xbox 360 definitely had that too, right? But at some point, they all have, for whatever reason, kind of abandoned this, like, here's your online avatar thing. And I'm not entirely sure why, but I felt like Sony was going in the right direction with it, and I felt like they could have done some really cool things with that if they had just stuck to it.
You know, it's interesting that they named it the Mii, because if you ask anybody, hey, what were the online avatars on the Nintendo called? And then somebody can say, it's a Mii.
Right. Sure.
It's a me. Well, Mario.
So what's funny is what you just described, Hunter, with home and the things that you liked about it goes back to Club Caribbee, which was a service for the Commodore 64 that had a graphical interactive, you know, space where you had your avatar and you could walk around and talk to other people using dial-up.
Huh.
So like, you know, this idea is not new.
CompuServe.
Yes. Well, but my point is these ideas are not new. They've just been tried and never really quite pulled off. And I agree with you that Sony bailed on home too soon. Had they ported it to PS4, it might have been something, you know. Had they made it an optional home screen for the PS4 and then tied it into the PSVR, now we're talking, right?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, exactly. But I'm agreeing with you. So the thing, though, for me was the two lessons I agree with what Jim said earlier about the PS3 being hard to develop for. So the two lessons I feel like Sony took away from the PS3 era, their two mistakes were they didn't have a good, you know, online integrated service, and they didn't have an easy to program console for. And the PS4 addressed both of those very, very well. Combined with the fact that Microsoft shot itself in the dick with the Xbox One launch, gave Sony a big leg up, and they were able to be successful with the PS4. Nothing else Sony did was successful in that time period, right? We've talked about the PS Vita. It was a much better handheld than anything
Nintendo had. I don't know if we've talked about it here. We talked about it before the show, but let's dive on to that for a second.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
So the PS Vita, you take it away. You take it away.
Oh, okay. Well, so the PS Vita, when it launched, was very expensive, and it used proprietary Sony memory card technology, but it was a beautiful handheld. It was, if you dig into the code on the system, it was referenced internally as the PSP2, but it had PSP backward compatibility, but it was renamed the Vita. The Vita means life, was the thing they announced on stage. It had 3G connectivity built in, so you could buy a model with a 3G modem and subscribe that through AT&T and get wireless service. It was pretty much useless, but neat idea. And it had an OLED screen at a time when that was, you know, sci-fi basically technology. So like Sony did a lot of things right, although I think they overestimated how much people were willing to pay for a portable console. And they came out with a cost reduced version later that used didn't have the 3G option and had a more traditional LED screen or LCD screen.
Well, it's like the PSP was a pocket PS2, but they failed to port all the PS2 content to it.
Right. Well, so this is what we were talking about before the show, because When Nintendo came out with A Link Between Worlds on the Nintendo 3DS, right? So I had at one point an original DS, and I had sold that off years prior, and I was really excited about the idea of A Link Between Worlds. They're revisiting a classic kind of Zelda game. They're putting a twist on it. It's taking it in a new direction. I was like, sure, I think I could jump on the bandwagon, because they were doing some interesting things with Smash Brothers and the Wii U. There was like some really interesting kind of integrations they were doing with their 3DS and the Wii U at the time that I was actually kind of really intrigued about. And so I was actually getting excited about getting a 3DS. So I got a 3DS XL edition that was the Zelda edition that came with A Link Between Worlds. It was gold. And I was falling in love with this thing, and I was actually using it a lot. And then they announced like that they're coming out with a new 3DS that had a tiny little nub on it as a new little joystick for these new games that they're going to be coming out for it. And I was shattered. I was like, what the literal hell? Because Nintendo keeps putting out all these peripherals. They keep putting out all this stuff. And it's just like, at some point, I just need them to stop. Because it's just like, I don't understand what the purpose of all of this is, and they keep coming out with new stuff. Like, who's going to constantly keep upgrading these things? Not me. Some people will, like your whales out there, they'll definitely do it. But you know, it frustrated me to no end that happened. And I think that was the beginning of my downfall with Nintendo, where I was just like, I'm now starting to exit this platform because I'm just not going to deal with this. And so then they came out with some little add-on, and Malify just posted a picture here in our retro stuff. This add-on thing that was like this weird, and it used the infrared port on the 3DS to make this work, and it gave you that secondary joystick that was, and it is just kludgy as all get out, and it's just like, who wants to deal with this? And you look at the PS Vita and what Sony was doing with the Vita, they could have, if they wanted to, led the market in handheld mobile devices for gamers.
Yep.
They could have taken it over. They could have dominated it. They could have put, they probably could have ported and put so many things on that device. Hell, they could have, did they not do the PS Plus or whatever it was called for it?
Like, oh yeah, well it worked with it. They gave you a free game every month with PS Plus. It supported Sony's mobile, like, phone gaming stuff.
Yeah, but PS how mobile. but here's the thing. How much were they pushing that? Because this is all stuff that I never knew about until after its life cycle.
Yeah. Yeah, it even, like, if you had PS Plus, it would auto back up your save games when you had Wi-Fi or if you had the 3G service. I mean, it was so good. And they even had, if you didn't have a good Wi-Fi connection, but you had your PS3 wired up, you could download the PS Vita games on the PS3 and then transfer them using USB to the Vita. So, like, they covered all these different scenarios, but they dropped the Vita support out from the PS4. And then they came out with something that was really interesting, which was called the PSTV.
Right.
It was an $80 micro console bundled with a controller when it came out in the US. And it was a Vita without the screen and the built-in controller.
Wow, it's like a Shield TV.
It was.
Right.
And it did all the media streaming apps that the Vita supported. And it did, this is the part that makes me angry, that makes me friggin' furious with Sony. Both the Vita and the PSTV supported 720p in-home and over-the-internet streaming from the PS4. Meaning if you owned a PS4, you could take the Vita on the go to your friend's house, fire up your PS4 sitting at home, and play a two-player game with your buddy while you're sitting on the couch next to each other. You could use the Vita as a controller for your PS4. You could use the PSTV in your bedroom to play your PS4 in your family room. And you know how much of this they advertised? Absolutely goddamn none of it. And what is infuriating, which boggles my mind, they were doing these amazing ads for the PS4, and not once did they mention the goddamn PS Vita or the PSTV. It was a crossover device, and they never told anybody that you could cross it over. It just...
Yeah.
It's so dumb.
And here's the thing that is the kicker, is Microsoft is doing all of this now, and they're telling everybody.
Yes, like, they are marketing the shit out of it. And, you know, you can turn your nose up about it, but the reality is there are a lot of gamers who don't listen to this show, who don't read the gaming news sites, who don't follow the space. They're very, like, minimally engaged gamers, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have a system at home. A buddy of mine, God love him, you know, he bought an Xbox Series or an Xbox One S, sorry, Xbox One S like a year ago. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, would you please come talk to me before you buy anything? Like, you basically just took $200 and set it on fire. I mean, it's not that it won't work, but to be fair, that's not really true, because the One S for what he's doing is perfectly fine. But had he waited, he could have done the all access, bought a Series S,
right,
and probably had a lot better experience. But
right.
Anyway, the point is, there are a lot of gamers who are very, I don't want to say casual, because casual is kind of a dirty word, but are not, like, super plugged into the gaming space. And you've got to kind of tell them about this stuff. And
well,
Sony failed to do that with the Vita or the PSTV. They failed to tell anybody about what they were doing, even their developers.
I hear you. But the thing that's interesting to me is, if, like, I had known about this, I probably would have bought into that. Because, like, I'm super pumped the fact that Game Pass is doing great things. I super pumped the fact that I Steam Link at home over my Nvidia Shield. All this technology that Sony was trying to do with their stuff that I'd had no idea even existed when I'm out there shopping around and I'm trying these different technologies and I'm like, oh, I can stream. But the thing is, though, is I was looking more towards my PC because I was like, oh, I can stream my PC to my Nvidia Shield and I can play all these games. And then Steam came out with their Steam Link, you know, and, you know, eventually they came out with the app, which is even better because now I don't have to deal with a stupid one-off device. It just sits pretty in a box on my shelf because I basically got it for a buck. And, you know, so it's a collector's item now. I've got a Steam Link, never been used. But the point I'm making, though, is I've talked about this for years because Nvidia did the same thing, right? They had this technology that they were working on, but they didn't really, like, advertise it or talk about it very verbally, you know. So they were doing stuff like, you know, years ago, like, you know, five years ago at least at this point, where they were doing I could be at, and I've even done it with Jim, like I can be at home playing, let's say, Lego Star Wars 3, the Clone Wars one, right? And then I can send him an invite link that he gets as a Chrome extension install, and then it's all done through Nvidia, and it's game streaming to him, and he can play as player 2 as I'm playing as player 1.
And yep, and you know what? Guess what supports exactly that? PlayStation 4.
Right. But you see, I would never have known that. But
no, well, because they didn't tell anybody.
Right, but then continuing on with all that, guess who does it now natively? Steam. You know, it's like, you know, the PC market's already starting to get on it. You know, the Xbox stuff is slowly starting to get on it because from what I read, I can cloud stream, but then I can invite people to play with me if I'm not mistaken. So like
I haven't seen that you can do it on your local console yet though.
Oh, which is okay.
The part that I want. So the Xbox has something called Copilot, where if you're playing a game and you know you're playing with your nephew or something, and they don't know what the hell they're doing, you can actually link your controller and theirs to player one and help them, which is super cool. Nobody does that. It's a great assistive technology too for people with disabilities, but they haven't done the virtual player 2 stuff, which I really hope that we get with the new streaming support that the Series X and S should be, you know, getting soon on those consoles. But
so, yeah, but to kind of tie this back into the original question, though, with everything that's been going on, with everything that we know that Nintendo's working on, with everything that we're not sure that Sony's working on, with everything that we've been hearing from Microsoft, because they've been, for the last year plus, I think for the last maybe 2 years, they've just been nothing but just showering the gamers with new stuff or new information or announcements, and then they eventually follow through with them. It's getting kind of crazy. Are exclusives good for gamers? You know, yes, but am I getting nervous that we're starting to slowly get away from that? Yes. And I think that, I mean, you know, the console wars, I felt like it was a good thing because, you know, it gave people variety and options. Well, what are you more interested in? What ecosystem are you interested in? Well, I'm more of the Mario kind, you know, or I'm more of the Sonic kind. And then when we lost Sega due to being ahead of their time, unfortunately, you know, it kind of felt weird because it was just like, you know, because Sony had entered the market in the mid-90s there with the PlayStation. And, you know, now you've got the PlayStation going about its thing. And then, you know, Microsoft comes out of nowhere and they come out with a box, a big old, you know, cinder block of a console. And, you know, and you know, we talked about Halo's 20th anniversary on our last show. I mean, if it wasn't for Halo, I don't think Microsoft would have made a dent, but yet here we are later and they're like almost leading the industry at this point now. You know, they've done a complete 180 on the PC market and they're doing great things on the PC. But see, that's just it about the PC market that I find so interesting, is because Microsoft is not just about their console anymore. You know, they're not competing in this console war exclusivity thing anymore. They're just exclusive to themselves and where they want to put their product. Right, because they're you know, obviously with Windows it's Microsoft, so you know they have their Windows store, so you can get stuff through there. So they've gone back and they're putting Halo on PC again, but not only are you able to get it through their store if you want to, but you can buy it through Steam. You know, and you can buy a lot of Microsoft games now through Steam. I mean, hell, EA has done a 180 on Steam, and they've put their stuff back on Steam. Hell, they've partnered up with Microsoft, and now you can, if you have Game Pass Ultimate, you get EA Play, the tier one of EA Play or whatever it is on Game Pass, right?
Yeah, I wonder what happened at EA where they ate crow and reversed their idiocy.
I have no idea, but I mean, you know who wins? Everyone, like. The gamers win, you know, they win because they start selling more. Steam wins because they get more from the sales, you know, and you know, all this nonsense. So it's just kind of like, I think everybody wins in some form or fashion.
I think one thing to keep in mind is that the price of games was $50. What? 8 years ago, 10 years ago, on PC, you know, it's $50 or $60 now for a brand new game. On consoles, it went up to $60 because you were paying $10 a game to the back in the day, you were paying $10 a disc to Sony or Microsoft, which is why console games were more expensive. But ultimately, the price of games has not changed significantly. There was some developers who were going up to $70 this generation as their standard entry price. But by and large, the price of games have not changed. And the reason I'm mentioning this, especially if you look at it over with inflation, right? The reason I'm mentioning this is because if you consider the cost of developing a 4K game today, development costs have gone through the roof. But the sale price per unit has not changed. Now, economically, if you're selling more units, then you could still make up that gap. Higher development costs, same sale price. Okay, if I sell more units, we'll make it up in volume, right? But what we've seen is a proliferation of other ways of monetizing games. And that's taken the industry so far, but there's a big pushback, right? You've got European countries threatening to restrict games as gambling when they have loot boxes. You have gamers themselves pushing back and saying, hell no, we're not going to, you know, do progression based loot boxes. That was the big backlash
I think
Battlefield, Star Wars Battlefront 2.
Well, so here's the deal though. I think in some cases some of these other countries are doing is actually justifiable because it quite literally is a gamble.
I'm not questioning the morality one way or the other. All I'm saying is this is the landscape that game developers are in.
Right.
And I'm pointing this stuff out to make a point. Which is the ways that game makers can make money are limited. They can raise prices. They can sell you a season pass with DLC, and that gets them so far. They can put in gross, you know, mobile monetization schemes, which has kind of backfired. And so what are they left with, right?
In-app advertising.
Yeah, but that even got a ton of backlash, and they backed off. Oh, sure did.
They backed out of that fast.
Yeah. So what's left? Well, you can do, if you want to do a games as a service, sure, you've got some opportunity there. But much like MMOs, 15, 20 years ago, it's a big roll of the dice if your games as a service game is going to take off and be successful. The recent Marvel game being one example of that failing badly, despite, you know, a huge AAA license.
So we were talking about the consoles, right? And like the Wii was way underpowered and whatever. Is it cheaper to develop a game for the Switch because it is a less powerful platform and you don't have to do all that 4K art and all the assets? So I'm at the point where if the game is fun, I don't need it to look like super next gen.
Sure.
Because there's not enough difference from last to current.
And that's the argument that I've been making this whole time sorry. Anyway, go ahead.
I want to talk about that in a second, but let's put an pin in it. Cause I want to get, I'm trying to like build to a specific point. So you look at all these factors that I've just been talking about, and where that leaves game makers is if we want to make more money, which is what our shareholders demand, right? The one way that we have not done that is to port our games to other systems. So when you start talking about Microsoft, they are putting all of their first-party games on PC and Xbox. You look at Sony, they are starting to dip their toe in porting their games to PC because it's free money. There is a large contingent of PC players who will never, ever, ever buy a console. Period, full stop. So if you want to reach those consumers who are willing to pay $60 for your game, if you bring it to them, Sony's testing that out. Microsoft's already figured out, hey, we can get twice as much money by selling these games on both platforms, Xbox and PC. So why we're seeing this change, I think, is because it's a way for these companies to make more money. And they've started to figure that out.
So if you're Sony, I would say, I don't want to put it on the Xbox because that's my direct competing, peer platform.
Right.
But the PC is a neutral ground where everybody is. So,
players will never put, don't care about PlayStation, right? They will never engage on PlayStation. They won't buy a PlayStation console. So, the only way you're going to reach them,
right,
is putting it on PC. Where I think there's an argument that you can get Xbox players to convert or dual box more easily because they're already used to a console ecosystem and what it means to be a console owner and player. They have a controller, they're used to having it on their TV, things like that, where PC gamers are different. They want mouse and keyboard, they want it designed for a 30 inch monitor, not a 50 inch TV or whatever. So I think PC is an untapped market, air quotes, lightly tapped maybe, for a lot of these companies.
Well, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. If Nintendo wanted to really make money, they could easily invest in an infrastructure to allow PC players. Could you imagine us doing like a Mario Party night, like with the community?
Can you imagine if Nintendo put out their own Switch emulator for the PC, and the store was built into the emulator, and then I could just run a Switch on my PC because I'm never going to buy a Switch, but I would buy the shit out of Breath of the Wild. You want to make $60? That's the choice. Do you want $60, Nintendo? Because I'm not giving you $360, but I'll give you $60.
But you're hitting on exactly what I wanted to like drill into here, which is Microsoft's already done this, right? Every first party game is going to be on both platforms. Sony's dipping their toe into this space. They just bought a company that specializes in porting PC games. We talked about that last week. And Sony has released a couple games. They've got a couple more in the pipeline, and they're older games, no question, but they're still porting, Sony exclusives to PC. So the odd man out is Nintendo. And
as always,
absolutely. But it makes me question whether at some point we will see Nintendo soften their PC stance. And the only thing that gives me hope is that there was a time when Nintendo turned their nose up at mobile, and yet now we have both Fire Emblem and Fire Emblem, Pokemon, and Mario all on mobile. And by most reports, they've done pretty well. So,
yeah, because my phone will run a circle around a Switch. I have a gamepad for it. I guess their only fear is piracy, right? Like, if we if we let this be on there, then people will figure out, hey, guess what? Have you been to Fit Girl's website, Nintendo? Because I'll tell you what.
Yeah. Piracy's already, yeah, that ship sailed, right? You might as well. And what we've seen with movies, with music, is people will pay and get this stuff legally if you make it easy for them to do so. If you make it, you know, simple for them to get the game and play it on whatever system they want and give them, you know, the features they want, they will give you money, no question. But, you know, you have to be willing to make that investment. And I mean, Nintendo doesn't even have an online service that is worth the name, right? It's there. The Nintendo Switch Online service is so primitive compared to what Xbox and Sony do. I don't know.
Nintendo figured out they could sell like little mini retro consoles to people.
Mm-hmm.
With a back catalog of games on it, but they haven't figured out that you could sell that same emulator that you bastards stole, because we know you did it. But you could sell that same emulation wad on an Android phone or a tablet or the PC or anywhere, right? Like, I don't need the hardware.
Right.
Maybe
right.
That's the problem. They're too much. They're still a hardware platform, and they haven't gone Sega where they're like, okay, we're just making software, and it doesn't matter what platform it runs on. We're just making games.
I think Nintendo is still tied to that idea of hardware. I think Sony, to some extent, is still stuck on that. I'm not as convinced as Hunter is that that'll change, because Sony is a hardware company, right? Remember when they made the best TVs, the best CD players in the world?
Well, maybe that's how the market needs to be, right? Is like a game console is like a TV. I can watch a show on any TV. Which TV do I want to buy? I want to buy the best one. Okay, I'll get the Sony one.
Right? I just don't know how much longer they're going to be able to sustain that is all I'm trying to get at, because it's like... You know, they might be a hardware manufacturer, but I feel like hardware is only going to get them so far if they're not willing to put the investment to provide something for their user base, because right now their user base has drunk their juice and they're committed to that. Like, I just know some people they will never change. They're only going to be PlayStation, whatever. Like, and I used to think that I was only ever going to be Nintendo. Like, I used to think that I will never buy an Xbox. Screw those guys for stealing Halo away from us, because we had Halo PC. And then we had Halo 2, and then Halo 3 is not going to be on the PC. And, you know, I had like this bitterness about Microsoft for so long, and then eventually one day I got a 360 because I wanted to play Rock Band on their platform, and because they hadn't put it out on the Wii yet. So I went to a GameStop and I bought like the whole kit, you know. Mm-hmm. And then from there I was like, well, what else do they have on this thing, you know? And then all of a sudden I was like, oh crap, I'm in, you know. And so like for the 360 era, you know, I definitely got scooped in, because there was one thing that was interesting that was very unique on the platform as an experience, and that was the Rock Band stuff. It's amazing how the Rock Band thing has definitely died down, but the experience of it is what drew me into their platform in the first place, right? And so, you know, here I am years later. And, you know, I've got an Xbox One X and I absolutely love it. You know, I'm 3 years already in on the Game Pass Ultimate. I've paid for the next 3 years on it already, because, like, you know, I found that good deal on it where you could convert the EA Play stuff or whatever it was. But, like, you know, I've tried the PlayStation 2 after its life cycle was done. You know, I got in on the PlayStation 2 for a little bit and played a few games here and there, but, like, you know, nothing about it super compelled me. And then here we are years later, and we've got, what is it, Kingdom Hearts now is on the Epic Store, right? We've got
Square Enix has been moving all of their stuff to all the platforms, right? You can play all the Final Fantasy games on Xbox now, I think. The, you know, I mentioned, we talked last week about and I asked Nippon Ichi Software. They've been bringing all their Disgaea games to PC, which were PlayStation exclusives for a number of years. Like, it's not just the hard, it's not, the whole industry has realized going multi-platform benefits them. I've got to bail, so I'm going to kind of wrap up my thoughts here and say, I think the hardware makers are having a harder time sort of accepting that this is the way to go. But it sure, what drove Sega to do it was financial, and Microsoft has a boatload of cash from Azure. That is what makes them money. Sony doesn't have anything that makes them, that is a cash cow for them. So there is the potential, if it becomes an arms race, a money race, Microsoft will win because it has like 10 times the money of either Nintendo or Sony. So it's just a question of, you know, willpower at that point if Microsoft wants to compete.
Yeah,
but
well, right on then. Yeah, well, we'll definitely wrap up this episode though. I mean, it's definitely an interesting market out there. I'd like to see Sony do more because I do think competition is good, especially for gamers. I do think it's important that people feel like they can have a choice in where they want to play their games. Because I'm not trying to harp on Nintendo users or Sony users. If that's the platform that they want, then I say continue to go for it. I just would love to see more done for those platforms, for those people, because otherwise it's all going to get dried up and then you're going to see less and less competition, and that's not good for the market, I think. But anyway. Yeah,
well, so a thing that Mel was saying though, right, about the funding, right? Like developers can only make money and however. So if the developer is not married to the platform, like Square Enix used to be exclusively a Sony thing, right? And right. Sony, I'm sure, was funding development of their games because you don't own them, but they're kind of a first-party studio because they only appear on your device.
Yeah, second-party. Well, yeah.
Yeah. So now they're not funding the development exclusively because the developer has figured out we can make much more money if we just cross-platform our thing rather than tying ourselves to this just for the funding.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Yeah. But then Microsoft's acquiring studios to prevent them from doing that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so is Sony, to be fair. Just not, they're not the big headline names as much, but they are locking in these developers. And so I think that's where.
But what about Konami? What are they?
Well,
who cares?
Well, yeah. Well, anyway, we'll see. Well, we're still running our giveaway over on our Discord. Once we get to 100 people, we'll do $100 gift card giveaways. Well, $25 each, of course, you know, one a week for 4 weeks. So please be sure to tell all your friends and come on over for that. We have our Battlefield 4 server, so come on over and get details over at discord.otherworlds.gg for more information. We'd love to see you guys there and come hang out with us. We're having a pretty good time over here. We will see you in the next episode. This has been episode number 27. Have a good one.